Okay, well, I thought we'd move on to a basic question of why have mandates? Because when Stephen Harnad leapt up and said all this stuff is kind of written out of the public purse and for reasons of the public good, why isn't it open to the public? It seemed like a no-brainer to him and to other people that why wouldn't you make things open? So repositories were set up and people said, okay, just watch them fill up, and they didn't. So that it reasonably soon became obvious that left to their own devices, researchers had limited incentive to deposit papers in repositories. So that they may all think that it was a good thing, but lots of good things, I think they thought it was a good thing for other people to do rather than for them personally to do. So mandates were really necessary to encourage people along in the right direction.
And particularly if you're a foundation like the Wellcome Trust, you're shelling out all this money, in some cases billions. You want a return on your investment.
Yeah.
It's got to improve the public good.
Yeah, that's right. But when you look at the other interested parties involved, there are two other interested parties involved. One are the copyright owners, which are the publishers, who have a vested interest in not having these things openly accessible to the public en masse, because if that was the case, they wouldn't be able to sell journals for large sums of money to university libraries, which is what they like doing. And the other vested interest is are the authors, who could be expected to follow the public interest because that's what they're working for, but in practice that's much more complex.
Yes.
So that's why mandates have been necessary. So does that make things clearer?
I think it's really good.
Where you've got people who are strong advocates of open access, they have moved fairly quickly to the conclusion that some form of strong encouragement, and not just institutional endorsement, but some form of coercion is necessary. The word coercion sounds dreadful.
Yes.
I try and use it in just a neutral sense. Requirement rather than coercion. Yes, mandate.
And it seems like funder mandates have a little bit more teeth to their to their requirement, rather than an institution which...
Well, yeah, that may depend. I mean, I think you look at Queensland University of Technology, QUT, which is one of the earliest institutional mandates.
Yes.
I think we have that down here. And that was Tom Cochrane, who was the Deputy Vice-Chancellor and a strong believer in open access. So that was a really strong top-down mandate that was followed through on with the result that QUT has traditionally and still has a repository with a lot of stuff in it.
Right.
If the mandate takes the form of a policy which says put your stuff in the repository, it's a bit like trying to herd sheep by whistling. You know, you will whistle and the dog might come, but the sheep will tend not to. Apologise for likening thousands of our colleagues to sheep.
Yes. And generally the rate in Australia and New Zealand is not nearly as high as...
If you compare it to a leading university such as Loughborough, which have about 85%, but that could be because of the UK mandate, which is a national mandate, whereas compared to here in New Zealand, the work that you've done, Bruce, has sort of shown us that it's 30 to 40%.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. The open access number for New Zealand, the magic number, is 42% of 2017 New Zealand university articles were open access, or are currently open access articles published in that year. But if you look at the green ones, because open access, you know, it comes in all these colours, if we look at the green ones, a pretty high proportion of them are green because of mandates outside of New Zealand. So yes. The NIH, the US National Institute of Health mandate, they fund health research around the world, and there are plenty of New Zealanders working in teams that have NIH funding, so that's how a fair amount of New Zealand stuff ends up green, just through the PubMed Central repository, through the NIH mandate.
Yes.
If you look at things where the lead author, the reprint author, corresponding author is a New Zealander, the numbers are rather less, because we're not as subject to those mandates as other countries are.
And health funders, particularly like the National Institute of Health, Wellcome Trust does a lot of health funding.
Yeah.
They're the ones that actually want this these publications in green open access, simply because they know that it benefits humanity. So it's I think would you think that it's health mainly that has been the sort of beneficiary really of these open access mandates?
That's a very big driver of it. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I think that everybody wants to. Often when people look at research, they don't see beyond health.
Yes.
You know, so that what we listen to on the radio and so on, it's all to do with medical research, and in the public eye, the two are almost the same thing. And
yes. I mean, for example, the Wellcome Trust has just recently changed its policy, and is now including a clause where it says that when there is a significant public health benefit, the preprints being shared widely and rapidly, such as in a disease outbreak, these preprints must be published before peer review and on an approved platform that supports immediate open access. Yeah. So this is even before.
Yeah. Yeah.
But how would you assess that level of...
Probably because there's been a global outbreak of Ebola or something as catastrophic as that.
Yeah.
So that's quite a radical change, and that's going to come in 2021.
Right. Yeah. They did delay that.
Yeah.
Yes. Change, yeah.
Well, I see there's now a promise in the next presidential term to cure cancer. I was seeing that on TV last night. So we can expect a huge blossoming in research. And to do it within a one presidential term would require a very fast turnaround of research. So we could look forward to a substantial amount of stuff having to be placed in preprint repositories in order to achieve that goal. But I'm sure it will be done. I have every confidence.
Stop rolling on the floor laughing. So that's really kind of covered off, you know, what we're going to talk about, which was, you know, the impact. And it does seem to have an impact, certainly in other, you know, medical disciplines and science a lot more rather than...
Yeah. There's been a certain amount of pushback from publishers. There was a big legislative pushback in the States where they tried to change the law that said, you know, that publicly funded medical research had to go into PubMed Central. There was an attempt to get that repealed by the publishers, which was not successful. So there's another one that you might know of. The Green Open Access runs on the kind of Sherpa Omeo rules, you know. They're not set up by Sherpa Omeo, the publishers' allowances. And, you know, so they specify, the publishers specify which version of the paper can be placed in a repository and specify any embargoes.
Yes.
So most of the publishers actually allow an accepted manuscript to be placed in a repository immediately. One of them, Wiley Blackwell, insists on a 12-month embargo. Mm. But they have come up with this wrinkle that if the funder requires the thing to be placed in a repository, then there's a 2-year embargo. So that's a little bit of I was just about to use a swear word, which I mustn't do,
right.
But it's a bit of
yeah.
kind of rough play, shall we say?
Yeah, it's not cricket rules.
No.
But mentioning Sherpa Ramaya reminds me that Sherpa Juliet is the listing, isn't it? The alternative.
Yes, particularly useful for researchers to actually find out the funders' conditions for open access publication.
Right.
So if they, for example, are being funded by Wellcome Trust or the NIH or the Bill Gates Fund, whatever it might happen to be, they can actually check on this particular database to find out what conditions are attached.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, and that raises up the question about monitoring the mandates, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Whose job is it to actually make sure these requirements are fulfilled?
Yeah.
Well, it's probably up to the researchers in many ways, because they're not going to be refunded unless they come good on their initial mandate.
I mean, I think the big funders probably have that pretty much in hand, you know, like, or the, you know, you're not going to get money out of the Gates Foundation or out of the NIH and then go, thanks very much, I'm not going to stick up for my part of the bargain. You might begin, I don't know whether they have to sign contracts or not to get that, but I imagine that would be difficult to get away with. But institutional level mandates, as I say, they're pretty much suggestions rather than something that would be enforced.
Mm. Unless in Europe, like Loughborough, for example, who has a three-month time period for you to get your thing in, or else is not necessarily specified.
Well, Loughborough, 52% of this, this is using unpayable, 52% of their 2017 papers are available through green open access, and a much smaller percentage for gold and hybrid.
Right.
So it really does work.
Yes.
And
I guess the thing, I just keep coming back to the whole accepted manuscripts and the resistance we get. I know it's slightly off topic for here, but it's...
Yeah. I think it's very relevant, so we're all thinking about it at the moment, so talk.
Well, you know, you talk about Loughborough, and I really would like to know how did they manage to convince their researchers to play ball with this, you know, when we get quite a lot of resistance to that. And I actually talked to another colleague at another university this morning, and we were talking about it, and he just sort of said, well, tough titty, they've got to do it. So, you know, this is the evidence that demonstrates that it's beneficial.
Yeah.
Don't want those citations, okay.
But well, also in the UK, I think it's tied to the ref.
Yes, it is.
So that your stuff doesn't get considered for ref. So if there was a PBRF rule, which there isn't, and there probably won't be, saying you're not even going to be considered for PBRF, your outputs won't be considered for PBRF unless they're open.
Yes. That would be so easy to do. Not easy to do in practice, but just... Mm. It's quite a simple thing to state, you know. Yeah. That would just make things so much.
Yeah. Yep. But there we go.
Yes.
Mm.
Hasn't happened yet.
No.
Probably lots of politicians will listen to this podcast and go, "Oh, that's a great idea," and things will change. I have as much confidence in that as that I am that cancer will be cured by 2024. So.
And on that bombshell,
we just have to hang out for a few years and we're right. Don't have to worry about that anymore.
Alrighty.
Are we done?
Oh, I think we're
this
done.
Was Thanks. A quick one?
That was a quick one. Okay. Thanks very much for listening, everyone. Yes, and ka kite anō.
Okay, thank you.